Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's an episode more along the lines of recent events, what's been going on in American soccer, and nothing takes center stage more than Christian Pulisic basically saying, nah, I'm not going to show up for the national team this FIFA window. No, thank you. I'm a little bit tired. I need to recover, blah, blah, blah. God knows what the excuses are, according to reports, but that definitely hit center stage in the mainstream. And per usual here, you're going to get a take from somebody that is not a reporter, not a journalist, not a fan, but rather a practitioner in the space, somebody who has been in the game for an extremely long period of time. And so you haven't heard this take or these takes in the mainstream, but you're going to get it here. And the take or the takes is related to the softness that exists here in American soccer. It is pervasive. Why is it pervasive? We touch on that. Finally, we're going to end the episode with an audience question. I get regular emails. Once in a while, the emails are a little bit too complicated to give a thoughtful response to. And it's a lot better of a medium for me to just riff here on the podcast for 5, 10, 15 minutes, however long it takes to kind of peel back the onion of an answer. And part of the answer deals with training compensation and solidarity payments. So if you don't know what those things are, they are very important things, so you should stick around. And if you do know what those things are, how much do you know what those things actually are? What are the implications of those things? You may have read some things online, but like I just finished saying, maybe it's not sufficient or to sufficient depth. So we touched on that, and we have a couple other forays into tangential topics per usual. So I hope you enjoy this one. I must say that this episode and this podcast is sponsored by nobody but ourselves. And the way we do that is by offering coaching education products and soccer parent education products. For coaches, you go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. I won't bore the regular audience with all the details of why it's so important and why this product is the one you actually need and how there's nothing like it out there in the market, except for just saying what I just said. So go to 343coaching.com and experience the catapulting of your coaching career. Parents, it's essential that you be able to mentor your child appropriately. There is a right and wrong way when it comes to soccer. And usually the more experience or the better mentors that you yourself learn from, the better equipped you are to guide your kid. Guide your kid from a sporting perspective, meaning, hey, Johnny or Susie, look at these exercises, look at these videos. These are the types of things that you can work on your own to improve your technique. And Johnny or Susie, did you just see what Barcelona did in the build-up play there? Let's rewind the tape and break it down a little bit. So we kind of equip, or we try to equip parents with that discerning eye for football so they can navigate the American soccer ecosystem. For you guys, you need to go to 343masterclass.com. I can't say it enough, guys. Coaches, 343coaching.com. Parents, 343masterclass.com. The best time to have signed up was yesterday. The next best time is right now, as they say. And finally, if you're coaching the 7-versus-7 format with the little ones, go to 7v7coaching.com. Get on that email list and you're immediately going to get a sweet promotional offer that we've been running the past couple of weeks. If you're already on that email list and have not received that promotion, please feel free to reach out. Email me at gary@343.com. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoy this episode. Benny's a great host per usual. Here we go. Why are you smiling?
You look like you're in the zone right now, bro.
Oh, really? No, I was writing a few notes here down on my to-do list. That's all.
Okay. What you got on your list, dude?
Bro, it's so long. It's out. I'm buried, absolutely buried. And I'm doing my best not to take it out on the girl.
Yeah, I feel you. Do you think doing summer school, is it like adding to your burden, or is that like a walk in the park for you now?
It's time. It's not stressful. It's just time away from all the other stuff.
Yeah, no, I feel you, dude. Do you only have one class, though, or two?
It's two classes, Tuesday, Thursday, Monday, Wednesday, but they're those 4-hour blocks. So it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, definitely. All right, dude. What are you cooking tonight, bro?
I already cooked her because I have so much work to do. I'm like, I'm just going to feed you now. And then I'm going to have our podcast episode recording with Benny. And then I'm going to get to work. Like I can't be interrupted anymore. So I just made her an egg and cheese sandwich.
No.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, dude, once in a while, it can't be pinky up gourmet every night for her, you know?
Egg and cheese? Though? That like a sunny side up egg or what?
Yeah. Get the yolk all, you know, all over the bread for sure. It's pretty tasty, honestly. Oh, I put some bacon in there too.
So a little bit gourmet, dude.
Well, compared to what I usually make.
Yeah. Who's your like inspiration for, obviously not for egg and cheese, but like your most famous chef that you like?
Yeah, Gordon Ramsay, of course.
That was a legend, dude.
Wait. Yeah, I love his attitude. I love his personality.
Yeah.
No nonsense, pursuit of excellence at all times. And if you can't handle it, it's not like, oh, it's okay. You know, you'll get him next time. We'll make the meat proper temperature next time. It's all right. No, dude, get the F out of here.
Yeah, dude, I love the shows where this guy goes into like family-owned restaurants or whatever. And he just sees like the complete shit show that's going on. And this one just goes off on him, dude.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because some might say, oh, that's just his TV personality, Gary, for the ratings or something. Maybe. I mean, maybe, you know, folks are a little bit different in every environment for sure. But I don't think you can be successful like he is and a successful chef and open up all these restaurants and stuff and have it to be at the standard that it is without being hardcore. I don't think it happens.
Yeah. I think we need more personalities like him in football, dude. Just no nonsense, straight to the point, just savage, bro.
I think we have it. I mean, you've seen these clips. Everybody's seen these clips of Arteta going off in the locker room or Luis Enrique going off in the locker room or Pep going off in the locker room or Mourinho with the media or Mourinho, you know, on the sidelines. Yeah. I mean, it happens. And then you've got guys who have cultivated a reputation of not being that way, but I think it's complete horseshit, like an Ancelotti. Oh, look at Ancelotti's halftime talk. He just tells the guys in such a soft voice, oh, look, just go like this. You've seen this reel, right? Where he's like, oh, just go straight up the middle like that. And then they show a clip of his Real Madrid team, I think, just going straight up the middle and they score. You know, it's like, see, that's a good coach. He shouldn't be like going all crazy on his players or going crazy on the sideline or the media. Ancelotti's the role model. Please.
Yeah. No, I think what I meant to say, Gary, is that we need more personalities like that here in the States.
Oh, and yeah. But
it's funny that every single coach that you mentioned, like European or South American coach, I don't think you see many American coaches like that, dude, if any at all.
Have you seen any American coach on the sideline grabbing his balls like Cholo Simeone, you know, and when his team scores? I don't think so.
Yeah, dude, Brian.
Oh, man. Hey, for sure, Ben, for sure, you have to gather some of these clips and put them on the fucking YouTube channel, dude.
For sure.
On this episode, you have to get the Cholo Simeone grabbing his balls, you know, when his team actually scores an important goal.
Yeah. No, that would never happen here.
I think he turned around to the stadium. Maybe he was in an away game or something, and he did the gesture.
Legend, bro. Dude, it was even cool when Brian got red carded and he was walking off and his team scored and this was in the corner, like celebrating with the team.
Yeah, for sure. It's personality. It's legitimate passion. That's what makes the special ones. You can't be a stoic, I don't know, a stoic statue and always wanting to be proper and say the right things and et cetera. No, get that. I don't want any part of that, man. I don't want to associate with you. I don't want to do business with you. I don't want to be your friend. If that's who you are, all proper and politically correct, fuck off.
Do you think there's any coaches like that in the US? I mean, I know you've been outspoken about having respect for like Caleb Porter. I don't know your thoughts on Tab Ramos. I know you mentioned him a couple times, but you think that those guys have the personality or it's still lacking a little bit?
Yes, I think they have the fire inside them, but they've been neutered. They basically had their balls cut off by the establishment and you can tell, and it's happened at times where they want to express themselves and they just hold it in, you know, they just hold it in and they do have some gestures or some form of passionate expression, but you can tell they want it to be 10 times more and they pull back.
Yeah. You know what was funny too, Gary, is when I think after Berhalter got fired and there was like the interim coach. What was that guy's name? BJ something? Is that his name?
Yeah.
BJ Callahan?
BJ, yeah, that's right. Correct.
Right. And you see him like giving the halftime speech or the pregame speech, and then all the American fans are like, and it was almost like a football coach, but they're like, this is a guy that we need. Like, this is the passion that we've been missing. And sure enough, the U.S. won that game. And everybody's like, see, like, this is the guy.
I don't think I ever saw that halftime speech. Was it soft or was it hard?
Like, I would say more passionate and intense than like anything that you've seen from Berhalter.
Oh, but really?
Like I said, it was more of like a hoorah, like kind of rally speech. It wasn't anything like tactical or anything.
Got it. No, the best are the ones who are soccer brains and know everything, right? Or tactical masterminds and live and breathe every moment of this game and practically get divorced like Pep. You know, that's how crazy they get. That coupled with the passion makes a killer duo. So I, man, you say this BJ guy had some of that. I never even heard him talk, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm not saying that like, no, this guy was fucking amazing, but just like the fan base was like all over his nuts, dude. Like, oh, I love this one.
The fan base, and forgive me, like I know this is the wrong thing to say, because you're not supposed to insult the fan base. You know, the fan base are the supporters. They're part of your audience. And if we're, for example, trying to generate a podcast to your audience or cultivate it or make it bigger, the last thing you want to do is insult people. You know, they'll just go away. But we're being real, and the fan base here is retarded. They are stupid. And you've seen that. Well, who was it? The U.S. women's national team player who came out and basically said the fan base here doesn't know anything.
Oh, yeah. A couple of weeks ago.
It was a while back. The blonde chick. Lindsay Oren. I think that's who it is.
And you posted it like 2 weeks ago, or like reposted it. And I think I saw it.
Yeah, because somebody here, I want to look it up because I want to actually communicate this. I reposted it because somebody sent it to me, but I know that happened maybe a year ago, something like that. Let's see. Okay, I have it right here. So, quote, American soccer fans, most of them aren't smart. They don't know the game. They don't understand. That's a women's national team captain, Lindsay Oren. And folks went crazy, you know, like, oh my God, how can you say such a thing? The media went crazy because obviously she's kind of calling the media out for being non-smart also. And I don't remember, but she was maybe kind of forced to kind of apologize or take a step back or say something like, oh, it was in the heat of the moment, I didn't really mean it or something. Of course she meant it.
No, dude, I'm sure you can't say anything negative against the U.S. Like, even if you think back to, like, I remember I told you a while ago about this, like, Hope Solo documentary. Mm-hmm. And, like, she was playing in the World Cup, and, like, the first four games she was starting, like, killing it, making massive saves to keep him in the game. And then I think it was like the semifinal, and the coach put in like the veteran goalie because it was like her last World Cup and they lost. And after the game, like, Hope Solo is like, yeah, I would have made those saves. Like, I don't know what the coach was thinking. And ever since then, like, she was like basically crucified by U.S. soccer, you know, and kind of never found her way back after that. But if you say one thing bad about the federation, I mean, your career is over basically. Unless you backtrack, like you said, and come out with an apology and a statement. But yeah, dude, it's pretty sad.
No, unless if you're kind of irreplaceable. So Pulisic has a lot of power. Pulisic could, you know, especially during the Berhalter era, he'll probably say whatever he wants and he's not going to be ostracized.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Or if you're late in your career, like I think Hope Solo was already late in her career. She'd already done everything, won everything. So it's kind of like, who cares at that point? But if you're like a early 20 something or a teenager, heaven forbid, or you have a long way to go in your career, yeah, zip it. Even if the coach is an imbecile, you can't say my coach is an imbecile.
Yeah. Dude, I'm glad you brought up or mentioned Pulisic right now, because I wanted to ask you about this whole thing. I mean, you've seen all the outrage from the fans saying like, oh, this guy's soft. If any Argentinian or like a Brazilian got a call up to their national team, they would never take a rest period off. What are your thoughts on that whole situation?
Yeah, it's true. So in Argentina, obviously, for folks who are joining us for the first time, that's my heritage. It's broadly known. Everybody knows deep in their veins that it's all about the national team. The national team is way above the club, way above whatever club you're at. And so first off, every player's dream is to wear the albiceleste, is to be on the national team, or even get a call up to the national team, or even get a call up and you don't even play, be on the bench. It's like a dream. And so when the national team calls, that's it. You drop everything. You drop everything and you go to the national team. It doesn't matter. And so to put it in context with the Pulisic thing, the excuse apparently, because reporters don't know what the fuck is going on, okay? And whatever gets reported on, you don't know how, if what the true truth is. You don't know the details. You're not in the inner circle. You have no idea. But what was reported is that Pulisic reached out to U.S. Soccer and Pochettino and staff and said, hey, you know, I have a lot of minutes on my legs there at Milan. You know, it's good if I recover and I don't show up for the national team, right? That would never happen in Argentina. Impossible. No chance. And there's proof in the pudding here, because since the early days of the Argentine national team, where a whole bunch of players were emigrating to Europe to play European football, I'm talking about the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s, decades and decades, Benny, all the Argentinians play every single minute of European football. They are the starters on their team, and they're playing countless games and way more minutes than Pulisic has ever amassed, especially amassed this season. Doesn't matter. They've amassed way more minutes. And medical science back then wasn't what it is today either. So the recovery period wasn't as good back then. You didn't have all that sort of nutrition stuff either, or electrolytes. Yeah, I mean, you name it. Okay. The case is way better now. And they report for duty. They so much so that, yeah, it's time for their quote unquote vacation from club soccer. Maybe it was the off season, but it doesn't matter. They would catch a plane and the very next day they're reporting for Argentine national team duty. And then after they're done with the Argentine national team, no vacation, back to club duty. Or maybe if they had a vacation, maybe it's their club who gave them a little reprieve for the preseason. You see, they'll say, hey, okay, cool. Your preseason, you know, you can take an extra 3 days off or something like that before you join the rest of the group. Nobody and their fucking mom would reject the national team. And if they did, it would be the biggest scandal on planet Earth. They wouldn't recover from it. They would not recover. The player would never recover from that. They would never be called again. The only time I remember in recollection, people can fact check me, I'm pretty sure this is correct. The only time a Argentine national team player kind of refused to do what he was like told, I guess, by the national team was Fernando Redondo. So Fernando Redondo, central midfielder, legend of the game, Real Madrid player. He had long hair, like hair down to his shoulders. And Daniel Passarella was the Argentine national team coach at that point. And Passarella sent out a mandate when he became the coach. He sent out a mandate saying no Argentine national team player can have long hair, straight up. And Redondo's like, what the fuck? Like, I'm not cutting my hair. Go fuck yourself, sort of thing. And then that was the end of Fernando Redondo on the national team.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I have to look that up. I never heard about that.
Yeah, so that's the only, and that was, I think that was probably early 90s, maybe. Again, people have to fact check me.
Yeah.
Maybe, let me go quickly on ChatGPT or Grok, or let me go to Grok and see if it knows. When did Fernando Redondo refuse to cut his hair for the national team?
This guy must have had nice hair, dude.
Oh, you looked it up too?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, 1995.
That's wild, bro. Had he already been capped multiple times?
Oh, yeah, legend. Legend.
Yeah, that's crazy, bro.
Centerpiece at the peak of his powers, man.
Wow. Yeah, dude, for me and the whole Pulisic thing, I mean, I've heard the excuse too of like, oh, like guys, like he plays so many minutes for Milan, the World Cup is around the corner, like let him rest. I honestly think that's bullshit. And if you're, I mean, Gary, I've never been a pro soccer player, never been a national team player, but if I'm the guy or supposedly the guy in the national team and, you know, my teammates are looking to me for advice and support, even if I go to the camp and I'm not training, I would still want to be in that environment with the group, with the team, with Pochettino, learn everything that I can from him, especially when you have a World Cup, you know, coming around the corner that you're country is hosting. I mean, to skip this camp and this tournament, to me, it's just like mind-boggling. Again, I don't know the full context and what's going on with him, but if it was me, dude, like you said about the Argentine or the Brazilian players, I drop everything and I'm heading straight to camp, bro. Even if I'm fucking fatigued, I'm still going to... And dude, like you said, you brought up an amazing point, the science and the recovery that these guys have access to. It's like, dude, there's no excuse, man.
No, and somebody else generated an interesting graphic where it had a handful of other European-based players that are at the top of their game, like Lamine Yamal, among others, and some Brazilians who have 1,000 more minutes on their legs than Pulisic this season, way more minutes, and they're reporting for national team duty.
Yeah.
So it's unbelievable. Again, we don't know the details. Maybe there's a legitimate reason, but from what I gather, there is no legitimate, oh, I am seriously hurt sort of reason. Like, I'm in trouble here. Like, I cannot go. And even if you work something else out, like you said, Benny, okay, still go to camp, train with the team, be around the team, and maybe be a bench player, you know, during the games. Okay, don't be a starter. Don't play. You know, have the discussion with Pochettino, but at least be with the group. At least train. At least keep absorbing what it is that Pochettino wants from the team.
Right. I think it's
I want to go on vacation. I'm tired. Okay. Oh, that reminds me. I don't know if you've seen this reel where Pulisic, I think he's driving in the car and somebody's asking him, whoever's in the passenger seat, I don't know, is asking him a question about world-class players that he plays with or has played with. And he's kind of confessing. He's like auto-criticizing himself, saying, I need to level up. These other guys, like their body language and their posture is like, they're so confident. It's so confident in their abilities. Like, they don't give a fuck. Like, they know they're masters of their domain. They don't care who's in front of them. And he admits, like, man, like I need to be like that, you know, to maybe get to the next level. So he's not there. He isn't one of the global superstars. He's not world-class. And that statement alone kind of admits it, but now he's being soft.
Yeah, dude. And going on vacation is certainly not going to help him get anywhere near his goal. You know, I think also, Gary, we brought this up in the last episode where a player makes it to the pros and then they start becoming complacent. And, you know, in Christian's case, it's like, okay, everybody refers to him as the guy, the best, you know, United States men's national team player at the moment. And I think in his mindset is like, you know, I'm already there. I'm already the top guy. No matter what, I'm going to get invited to the World Cup. So why should I show up? I already have my place there. His mindset is like, oh, let me take this time off. Let me rest my mind. But it's just that level of complacency that, like, I'm sure all those guys that he mentioned that are confident and world-class players, I guarantee you those, if they go on vacation, Gary, it's maybe like 1 or 2 days right after the season ends and they're already back to training, you know, the next day. Like, I think those types of players never take days off and are always striving to get better. You know, I think he's reached a certain point in his career where he's like, yeah, fuck it. I'm already the best. So, you know, why am I going to keep pushing?
It's interesting. And it doesn't help the stereotype that has existed for decades of the American player, that the American player is like soft, right?
Yeah.
And people around the world always said, oh, the American player, hard worker, you know, runs a lot, you know, puts up a good fight sort of thing when it comes to the national team. But historically speaking, overseas clubs would look at an American player and be like, I don't know if I want to take that gamble, you know? And a lot of folks nowadays in the modern game, they tend to think that stereotype has gone away, right? And it has not gone away. There's still a judgment on American players that, because we have not arrived yet, Benny. People here think that we have arrived. Oh, look, we've arrived. We have a player on Juventus. We have a player on AC Milan. We have a few players in the Premier League or something like that. That doesn't mean shit. You know how long other countries have had multitudes of players in the top leagues and top clubs in the world? Like, why are you so blind to that fact right there? That we just have, you know, a generation that were given more opportunity than in previous generations overseas. But that's it. That's where the buck stops. It's not like we've arrived on the global scene And yes, you are right, Benny. I tend to think, because I've seen it and I've personally experienced it, I tend to think what you just said, that it's an entitlement thing. Oh, I know I have my place on the national team. Nobody can touch me. I can do what I want. I'm going to take time off. I'm going to go on vacation instead. What are they going to do? Not call me up? That's why I tweeted, right? Or posted on X that if I were Pochettino, and maybe that's why I'm not Pochettino, if I were Pochettino, I would strongly be considering or have it in the back of my mind, fuck this guy. When it comes to the World Cup, if it's really bad, Benny, right? Where this guy has a bad attitude or doesn't follow instructions or and is soft and all that, I would just fucking leave him off the squad like Jurgen did to Donovan. 100%. No, fuck you. You're out. You're not on the team. You're out.
Yeah, dude. I don't know. I feel like Pochettino would immediately get crucified and
because the fan base here is retarded and soft. That's why.
Yeah. Now, dude, it reminds me of like another viral clip that just came out. I think it's a football guy. I think it's Stefon Diggs. I don't know. I'm not a big football guy, but apparently like his NFL team is having like optional like training camp before the actual camp starts. So any players that want to come and work out and, you know, get reps in. And then this guy posts a video of him on a yacht with like three chicks, and guy like pulls out like a bag of coke and saying like, oh, here, like go party, you know? And then he's like, the next day the interviewers are asking his coach like, oh, you know, have you seen this video of your player? And the coach is like, yeah, you know, we want to make smart decisions on and off the field. And, you know, it's his choice not to be here. But think about all those guys that could be on vacation, you know, doing whatever they want with all this money, but they're not. They're there training, trying to get better. So I think some players do have that mindset of, I've already made it, you know. And not to say, Gary, because to be a pro athlete, you do have to put in work. So I know that these guys do put in a lot of work in the offseason. But I think, you know, if you want to be truly elite, like you always say, dude, there's different levels to all this, man. Just depends on how bad you want it. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about the football player either. But that happens in soccer as well, but only like with the super elite, where they can absolutely get away with it. Like Romario. There's stories about Romario, the Brazilian ex-Barcelona player, having his wild parties, or Ronaldinho Gaucho having his wild parties and boozing all night and stuff. But the difference is those guys booze all night, go to the game 4 hours later, you know, half drunk still, and fucking score in a Clásico and win the game. You know what I mean? Like, because they're so outrageous outliers compared to everybody else. And in that instance, the coach almost is like almost powerless. You know, it's like, what am I going to do? Like the guy is 10 times better than the second best guy on the team.
Yeah. No, dude, it's like Maradona racking up lines at halftime, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Maradona could do whatever he wants and it doesn't matter. He'll take a lowly Napoli who never won anything in Italy and take them to the absolute top of the top of the top all by himself, dragging the whole team upwards and drunk and coked up and partied out.
Oh my God. There's a clip.
Wasn't there a story of the UFC fighter, the GOAT? What's his name? John Jones.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So John Jones, there's been stories and he's even said, like confessed or something. Yeah. Like I went to this title fight against whoever the fuck it was. He's like, yeah, man. Like I was just coked up and partying. I didn't even do a training camp, you know, cause he's just that good.
Yeah.
He's like, imagine if I had actually took it serious and trained, like, no chance.
Yeah, dude. No, some guys can just get away with it, you know? No, I was going to say too, there's a video of Maradona from when he was coaching and this guy sitting on the bench. I'm sure you've seen it. He has like seven of his staff members come and like form like a circle around him to shield him. And you just see him like going down real quick.
Well, we don't know if that's actually true. Cause that's like a meme that was made of it.
Oh, you know? I know. Yeah. But yeah, dude. I mean, that guy could do anything he wanted. He's the best in the world.
Hilarious. Are there stories of, you know, playing? I think he was even playing against the U.S. men's national team. Again, I'll have to look it up. But Román Riquelme, Argentine legend, number 10, attacking midfielder, one of the best to ever play it. He played against the U.S. men's national team with his shoelaces untied. Yeah, you can fact check me if you want, dude. Yeah, he came out after halftime. And who was, I forget who... who was it on the national team who told me the story directly? Was it Twellman? I don't remember if it was Twellman. Somebody told me straight to my face. Like, he's like, Gary, you don't understand. Like, this guy just walked out of halftime, and I was watching him as he come back on the field. His shoelaces were untied. I'm like, oh, this guy's going to tie his shoelaces before kickoff or something. And no, he played the entire second half with his shoelaces untied.
Oh my gosh. Dude. Yeah, dude, I don't know. I mean, I think it would be a different conversation, Gary, if, like, right now Pulisic was like the best player in the world and he had that respect from his teammates. I honestly don't think his teammates respect him that much, dude. Again, like, I don't see why he can't, unless it's like Milan telling him that he can't go, I don't see why he can't just go and be around the guys and be that motivation. And I think that's part of the reason of the lack of success that the U.S. has had in the past, like, couple months and couple of games, is that, you know, they say that he's the leader of the team, but I don't think his teammates respect him, dude. Like, yeah, I know you brought up Ronaldinho. I don't know if you've heard this story about when he was, like, leaving Barcelona. I think it's Ronaldinho. And he's leaving Barcelona, and, like, the night before the game, this guy calls every one of his teammates, and he's saying, like, hey, like, this is going to be my last game with Barca. Like, don't tell any of your teammates. You're the only guy I'm telling. And then the next day in the locker room, everybody's quiet and you know, all sad. And Ronaldinho's like, hey, like, I called every single one of you last night to see if you guys could trust me. You know, like, this will just, like, command so much respect, bro. And I think that's what's missing from Christian, dude. It's like, yeah, he's good. He's performing. He had a great season with Milan, but I don't think he's a true leader.
Yeah. Interesting you bring up the Ronaldinho story and his exit from Barcelona. My recollection serves me right that it was Pep Guardiola, when he took over the team, Pep Guardiola said, Ronaldinho, you're out. Deco is a superstar too. You're out. And it's because those two guys were party guys. They didn't take things seriously. They were out all night, show up whenever they wanted, left whenever they wanted, were tactically indisciplined or whatever. Pep took over the first team. And that was like, that's pretty ballsy. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, his first move was like, you two, you're gone. I don't want you. But it goes to what we're discussing about, like, yeah, a Pulisic, you know, a year before the World Cup, it's a home World Cup. You don't get many opportunities to play with the national team. You've automatically, so you don't get that many opportunities to prepare for the World Cup. And you're like, nah, I'm going to take a vacation. What? Excuse me?
Yeah.
And you're not Dino.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing it's stupid too, because now, you know, other players are getting an opportunity to go to camp, but you just know for a fact, like, they're not making the World Cup roster. So it's almost kind of like just a waste. You know, you spend all this time working with these guys and then your main guy's not even there to absorb everything. So
that's what I'm saying, dude. I would just chop this guy. If it's truly like how kind of we're painting it, and it's not something legitimate, Benny, because maybe it's something legitimate, you know?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
But if it's something like how we're painting it, I would seriously consider chop suey. You're fucking toast. You're out.
Yeah. You might have a, because I think too, if that was the case, and I think you get more buy-in from the players, it's like, I've been here. I've put in my time. You know, if this guy doesn't want to be here, fuck it. You know, next man up mentality. I'm going to go off that. No, I like what Pochettino said about, you know, if you get invited to camp and you're here, don't fucking come to go golfing and to go partying. You're here to work your ass off, you know, and get better as a national team. And it's funny because it's kind of like a direct call out to a lot of the players, because you see them every camp. Like, you know, I know we bring up Weston McKennie a lot, but this whole, and the last camp was like golfing with, I forget who it's with, but, and they're all, you know, posting pictures right after training or golfing. And so I like that, you know, Pochettino came out and said that.
I just can't stand it, Benny. I can't stand it. The culture here is all wrong. It's a culture of mediocrity.
Yep, true. Me and that's tangent that we went on. I haven't even brought up the topic of today, but I like it.
No, it's fine. It's fine. And it'd be great if folks in the comment section let us know if you like these sorts of off the cuff, oh, let's talk national team, let's talk about the players on the national team. Because I know that gets a lot of traction. That's what everybody focuses on out there in the media space, because that's what has the largest audience. So they naturally want attention. So what do they talk about? They talk about the national team, you know, or talk about U.S. soccer. They'll talk about MLS. They'll talk about the big, big, they'll talk about Pulisic or McKennie or Weston or Tyler Adams, so that they get more attention because there's a broader base audience for that.
Yeah.
If we wanted, if that's what we cared about, that's what we would do too. We would now, let's go over the Gold Cup roster. Okay, why did Pochettino call this guy and not that guy? And who got snubbed and who has an opportunity? Whose stock is up? Whose stock is low? All the stupid shit that these guys talk about.
Yeah. Does that happen in other countries, Gary? Yeah, of course.
Because, you know, so what we care about, and you know this, is educating the audience, is the evergreen content, is talking about the fundamental principles that are involved, not just in the sport, but in the entire ecosystem around the sport. And that's limiting because it's evergreen. It's never changing sort of stuff, right? And the other folks who don't have the knowledge base or the expertise to talk about that sort of stuff, they rely on the ever-changing current event news cycle, right? So it's interesting to them. It's interesting to the broader audience because they feel it's something new. Oh, I wonder what the opinions are out there on the Galaxy being not winning a single game in 16 matches. Let's hear that take. And if they don't win their next game and they're 0-17, winless in 17. Oh, again, it all happens again. What's that guy saying? So it's an ever generating perpetual motion machine.
Yeah. No, those kind of seem like, I don't know, not fake fans, but you know what's kind of sad, Gary, is that you always bring up that there's a huge soccer first demographic in this country. And even if they are American, I feel like a lot of that demographic is rooting against the national team. You know, like the Federation and US Soccer has really done nothing to like inspire and rally the fans to want to come and support the team. You know, it's kind of shocking that you see so many Americans who love the game and they just, you know, they're kind of rooting for the US to fail, you know?
I think the ones that are rooting there, there's many categories, but here are two broad brush categories for the ones who want them to fail. The first one is the most abundant one, which is the people who feel disenfranchised in the country. Everybody who is not, you know, that classic white, suburban, affluent, middle to upper middle class person who has access to the machinery of soccer here, who has access to the youth clubs, the top youth clubs, and all that sort of stuff. If you're playing in like the Southern California youth Mexican leagues, you know, the renegade leagues, you feel disenfranchised because, and I know this personally too, if you want to go and participate in the classic club soccer competitive circuits, they don't let you in. They just don't let you in. Okay. Oh, who are you with? Oh no, I'm Ranchito FC, from from downtown LA or something. Ranchito who? Ranchito FC. Well, where do you play? Oh, and the whatever fucking Mexican league thing that they got over there. No, I'm sorry. You know, you kind of have to be competing in ECNL or MLS Next or all the other leagues that are known, right? Are the classic pay to play suburban soccer. So that demographic that is disenfranchised, yeah, they're like, fuck these Americans. Fuck them. I hope they lose and I hope they lose every game. It doesn't hurt, of course, that they're also Mexican or Mexican American. So they have that sort of rivalry thing, but at the same time, they are American. They live here. You know, you would want your home country where you live to be successful. And they're like, fuck these people, scum of the earth people. So that's one category. No, I'm serious. And then the other category are the ones who have opened their eyes to the mafia, to the racket that all of this is, to the monopoly. Because once you open your eyes to that, even if you are white, suburban, middle to upper middle class or affluent and have all the resources, that once you open your eyes to that, you see how you or your business or whatever, or your children are getting fucked, you know, by the system. So once you realize that they are effing you, you're like, you know what? Fuck you. I hope you fail like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Those are the two groups.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I feel like I know more Mexico national team fans than I do U.S. national team fans, which is, to me, it's crazy. I don't know, maybe it's because I grew up around all my Latino friends, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know many national team fans? I mean, Gary, you know a lot of people in soccer.
You know,
so.
No. I don't have, I'll tell you this much. The Mexican Americans who are whitewashed, okay, they developed a little bit of an affinity and they kind of want to see the national team win, you know, but kind of, you know, but if you're not whitewashed, then no, F the national team. I see what you guys are.
Yeah. I think it's just so different from any other country in the world. I know we always use Argentina as an example, but like you saw after they won the World Cup and there was like 2 million people in the street celebrating. I just can't imagine like the US won the World Cup and you see a million people gather in Washington, D.C. or something. You know, like I think in other countries, Brazil, Spain, Germany, there's so much pride that comes with watching your national team and seeing them win, seeing them succeed. And here it just doesn't feel that way at all.
Yeah. The U.S. look, the culture that has been carefully cultivated by design here by MLS and U.S. soccer is neutered. They want a neutered, passive, domesticated fan base, non-passionate fan base. That's what they want. That is what they've cultivated. So that's what we're seeing. Because if you reverse it, Benny, if Mexico were to win the World Cup, here in the United States, you would see millions of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans parading on the streets of Los Angeles, parading on the streets in Texas, parading on the streets on the East Coast. You would see what you just described.
Yeah,
seriously, you would see hundreds of thousands of people, Mexicans in the United States, parading around.
That sounds fun, dude. Taco
it
guy.
It sounds fun, man.
Yeah, dude. And for the audience, Gary, when you say neutered, because I think a lot of people don't realize in other countries, I know we describe their fans as passionate and they care about the game so much and, you know, they want to see their team succeed. But also when their team is not succeeding and when their team is at a low, like they will crucify their players, the coaches. And you kind of don't see that here from, like you said, the neutered fan base here that's been crafted by the federation.
Yeah. Well, MLS. The MLS is the responsible party. The federation is a little bitch to MLS, and it should be the other way around. But yeah, that's what I mean by neutered, is non-demanding. They don't want a demanding fan base. And it makes sense. You have a monopoly. You run a business. You're trying to accumulate more power. You're trying to make more money. You're trying to have the valuation of your assets go up and up and up. And so it's awesome if you don't have a demanding customer base. Wouldn't it be great? Like if name any business that you want in the world, anywhere, Benny.
In and out.
I mean, they'll take it in an instant that, hey, can I have my customer never complain? Can I have my customer never say anything bad about me? Can I have my customer, you know, of course you want that. And so since these guys here have a monopoly, they have the power to basically cultivate that. Oh, you don't like what we do? Well, fuck you. You don't get to work here. Oh, you don't like what you don't want to behave. We want the way we want you to behave in the stadium or in the parking lot or whatever. Banned. You're out. And people might say, oh, well, Gary, like it makes sense what they're saying. You shouldn't be a dick. You know, they're trying to cultivate a family friendly environment. Oh, that's great. Fine. But let's recognize that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
As a business. And Benny, and lastly, the key to all of that is a narrative. And the narrative that is the key to brainwashing everybody and having everybody comply is that this thing is just for entertainment, guys. It's just for, don't take it so seriously. They literally tell you, don't take it so seriously. It's ultimately just a game. Oh, yeah, it is ultimately just a game. That's right. I shouldn't be so pissed that the Galaxy has not won a single game in 16 matches. Nah, it's all right. It's cool. Just for entertainment.
It's sad. It's all around the world. It's not just a game. I mean, there was a Colombian national team player long ago. I think his last name was Escobar. And I think that, you know what I'm talking about. This guy scored like an own goal or something in the World Cup. And sure enough, the Colombian cartel murdered that goal, dude.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not saying for the audience or U.S. if McKennie scores an own goal, go murder him. But it's just an example of, like, this is, football is their life out there, man.
I'm not condoning. Let it be known. We're not advocating for that. Let it be known.
Yeah. I'm not condoning
murder. But that's completely out of bounds, an outlier.
Oh, right.
But for you to, or physical violence or that stuff, but for you to
100%,
you should be able to fucking, you should be able to be like Cholo Simeone on the sideline. Why are you not allowed to do that? Oh, it's degenerate, Gary, whatever. Okay, that's your opinion. That's your values. That's your worldview. It's certainly not the worldview of Atletico Madrid or the Spaniards or the Argentines or the South Americans or a whole huge proportion of the world, because nobody's outraged by that. Everybody's kind of like chuckling or laughing or giving a thumbs up and generating passion within themselves to see a man have such passion for what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I don't condone murder. I don't condone violence. But yeah, dude. Yeah. Even when you see like just interviews of fans around the world, like there was an interview of a Argentinian kid. I think it might have been for Josh. I love Josh. Is that Chardonnay?
This is the first time I'm drinking on the podcast, Benny. It is a Chardonnay.
Nah, dude, you're drinking many times.
I thought I only had like Celsius or Red Bulls or Monsters.
I feel like when we first started, you would have like some whiskey or something. What'd you have before?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, it was the same thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were having like a glass of scotch. So it's like, oh shit.
I wish I had some right now. It's been a rough week, Ben. So many spinning plates, but this relaxed me and gets the juices flowing. You didn't even have to trigger me all that much. I think the wine triggered me.
Yeah, that's good, dude. The fan likes it. Next week I'll join you with it with the glass.
Nice.
But no, I was gonna say, like, you see interviews and videos of fans across the world, and there was a kid, I think he was like a Boca fan, and he went with his dad, and this guy's like, they're not even in the stadium, they're outside the stadium with all the fans. And the kid's like crying because he's so happy. He's like, we sold everything to be here. I sold my PlayStation. We sold our TV just so we can, buy a flight to be around the fans. Like, dude, that would never happen here in the States, bro. You tell a kid to sell his PlayStation to go watch FC Dallas. There's no chance, bro.
Actually, that reminds me of me seeing something when Messi first arrived to Inter Miami. And they were interviewing some families who made the purchase to go and watch. They interviewed, clearly it was a Mexican-American family there. It was husband, wife, and two kids. And they were interviewing them on the touchline there. And they're like, hey, what made you come out today? And he's like, well, obviously Messi has arrived. My kids have wanted to see Messi. I've been wanting to see Messi my entire life. We never had the opportunity to go to Europe and see him and stuff. But now he's here, thanks to God or something. And they asked him how much he spent. He's like, well, I took out a loan, and it's like $2,500 for the guy to go to an Inter Miami match to see Messi. Like, he got good seats, don't get me wrong, but he literally broke the piggy bank for his kids, probably more than anything, to go to this match.
Yeah, dude, that's what's fucked though, because like I like a story like that, or I don't like it, but I respect that guy for doing that. But then you have people where $2,500 for them is like chump change, and they take their kid to the game and the kid doesn't even care, or the dad doesn't even care. They get one picture on Instagram and it's like, oh, I saw Messi, and they're not even watching the rest of the game. We have the wrong people in the stadiums, bro. Seriously.
1,000,000% the wrong demographic is in the stadium, but it's the right demographic for MLS. They love it.
True. But yeah, dude, I mean, respect to that guy, bro. His wife probably wanted to kill him, but once in a life.
They were all decked out in like the pink, the wife was decked out in the pink too. But that's like a soccer first household. And they broke the piggy bank to go see it. What sucks, Ben, is how they're taken advantage of. That's what sucks. Because overseas, there's legitimate clubs, real clubs, and they don't gouge their supporters.
No, dude. Dude, I had the chance to go to a Barca game, and this is, I mean, Messi was pretty much still in his prime, and dude, the ticket for the Barca game was like, I think I got like a, we got like a Groupon. So you got like two nights at a hotel plus a Barca game ticket for like $200, dude. I mean, what a steal, bro. Here it's like, you got the worst seat, Messi's there, $500, dude.
Yeah, dude. And they're going to gouge everybody with the Club World Cup. and they're going to gouge everybody with the World Cup, and they're gouging everybody wherever Messi goes on tour to the different MLS franchises. Gouge left, gouge right, up and down. Oh, well, Gary, it's a business. Soccer is a business. Yeah, motherfucker. Okay. So let's look at it for what it is. It's not actual club football. It's not what it is around the world. It just isn't.
Yeah. No, they didn't. I mean, isn't there a lot of people that are saying, like, I don't even think Inter Miami competed their way into the tournament. I think they just got the spot. I don't know. I have to do more research on how they actually got in, but you know that they just got in because Messi's there and, you know, FIFA wants more money, dude.
For sure. Have you heard, because I don't read soccer stuff, honestly, but I see headlines here or there, that Ronaldo's trying to go to a team that's going to be in the competition. And obviously everybody's going to work so that to make that happen.
Yeah. No, dude, people are even saying like, oh, Ronaldo's going to sign a 6-month contract with Inter Miami and Messi can play together.
No chance.
Like, what are we doing? That's crazy, bro.
But it would be funny if, like, just out of the blue, Ronaldo is, going to a Brazilian club so that he can, what the fuck? This guy's on a Brazilian club now?
Oh, well, there's another club in the Middle East. I saw today, there's like two options. One, if he signs, he'll play in the Club World Cup. And then another club, if he signs, he'll get to play in like Asian Champions League or something like that.
Yeah.
That's crazy, bro.
That's cool. I don't hate those guys. They're he deserves everything in the world. The outrageous outliers deserve everything, whether it be in athletics, whether it be in business, whether it be in politics. The amazing outliers, I support you. Even if you're a dick, even if like Ronaldo like hated it when his teammates would score and he didn't score, like, I don't even hate it. It's fine. You earned, you know, your arrogance.
Yeah, definitely. Did you ever get to see Messi play less or Ronaldo?
Yeah, over here when it was Copa America.
Okay, so international.
Not Ronaldo. Cool.
Yeah. What did you think of watching Messi, or when did you see him?
Copa America, what game was it? Oh, Jesus.
I think a year was in 2016, no?
Yeah, 2016. That's why, dude, I'm telling you, my head, I'm dumping memory left and right all over the place. I forget. We traveled up north to go watch him.
Oh, at Levi's Stadium or whatever, the 49ers.
Is that what it's called? I don't even know what the stadium's called. It's where the 49ers play, I think.
Well, it used to be called Candlestick Park or something like that.
No, but I don't know. Sometimes I wish it, sometimes it doesn't really matter all that much to me to have maybe gone to like a Barca game during the prime years.
I thought you got to go when Brian Steam took those trips. You never went to one?
I don't think there was a local Barca game, dude?
Because I know there's pictures of, like, I know Danny was there. And Prieto, like, they're, like, holding up the 3-4-3 shirt.
No, I don't think I ever went to a Barca game there, no.
Wow. Nope. How did I make it there and you didn't, dude?
You care more about soccer than I do.
Yeah.
No, I'm being serious. I'm being serious.
Yeah. It was insane, though, girl. I mean, we were pretty much at the top, but just... Even from up there, you just see the quality of their first touch, the quality of their passes, decision-making, the movement off the ball. Like, I can still remember vividly a ball that Messi played from, like, or maybe I think it was Iniesta played a ball in, or like a diagonal ball, but just so pure and crisp. Like, it's like vivid in my head because you never see anything like that here. And to see it live was incredible.
Yeah. What's most impactful, and I hope folks get to do it if they haven't done it already, is if you can be on the touch line or very close to the field at a professional match.
Yeah.
Obviously the higher the level, the better, but any professional match. And then you gain a better appreciation for the speed of play.
Yeah.
Because it's super fast, Ben. It's outrageously fast. It's much faster than you think it is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's because if you're sitting like behind the goal or like in the corner, you can't really appreciate it as much.
You're like, oh, I could get on the field and do that. Look, no problem. No, I'm serious.
No, dude, like when I was, not anymore, but like when I was younger, and I'm sure a lot of people in the audience too, like you're exactly right. You're at a pro game and you're like, fuck, dude, and that could have been me right there. Like I would have finished that or I could have easily made that pass. Dude. But yeah, bro, no chance, dude.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Okay. So what are we supposed to be talking about today?
Well, dude, somebody had emailed you a couple of weeks ago about her son. Let me just quickly summarize the email. She says, "Hey, Gary, I just found your podcast. Great stuff. I have a question about my son who has been playing for a well-known U16 MLS Academy homestay program for 2 years. He's recently seen reduced playing time without explanation, which is disappointing. I suspect the U18 coach favors certain players, especially midfielders, and dictates the rosters for my son's U16 coach. My son is a true winger, and since his club doesn't use wingers in their formation, they don't value his skills." And she says she had a Zoom call with the academy director to discuss the status for next year. And here's the big question. If he's not invited back, can we ask him to remove them from their protected list? If not, can we still approach other club scouts? And she also says, should we be considering USL? And you gave her a response, but I'll let you, you know, for the audience sake, respond to that.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, huh? I do remember it, but not that crisp.
This is like 2 weeks ago, maybe? Two or 3 weeks ago.
So many angles we can go down, Ben.
Well, firstly, Gary, she mentions this thing about like a protected list, you know, so... Does that basically, what is that? Does that exist? Is there ways to get out of it? I know in your response to her, I won't mention the club, but you emailed her like a copy of like a club contract for like an academy system. And so I think within that contract, they said like, you know, basically if you do sign, you're not allowed to go and train with other teams unless you get like a club's approval or something like that. So can kids get locked into these MLS academies that early?
Yeah, so that's totally normal, right? Like if you agree to join a team or a club, like you can't just go out and willy-nilly be somewhere else without the club's permission. That's totally normal. There's no problem with that. I think the issue here that people need to understand is if you happen to be at an MLS quote-unquote academy, that they have you sign this document that basically locks you into an acknowledgement with respect to what's called training compensation. Okay. And to put it briefly, and I know I owe the audience a thorough explanation and assessment, pros and everything on training compensation. It's very important and I want to do a good job of it and it will come. But very briefly, it's a FIFA statute. I forget, it's like Article 20 of the status of transfer of players. You know, you can look that up, which states, hey, if you train at a club from ages 12 to 21 years of age, for every year that you have been at that club, when you transfer to internationally to another club to play professionally, then all your prior clubs that you trained at during your youth, you know, or up until age 21 or so, that new club that you're going to is responsible to pay them what's called training compensation. Okay. And it could be a lot of money. Okay, if you're in an MLS academy and you're going to go to Germany or, I mean, whatever, over in Europe, and you've been playing at that academy, MLS academy for 4 years or something like that, the club that wants you may have to cough up $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000. And that can torpedo your opportunity because the MLS club can franchise could just say, you pay us our money, you know, and the club overseas will say, we ain't paying $500,000 for your kid. But I don't think that's what they're asking. Okay. I think what they're asking is they want to stay within the United States and there are these territory rights with MLS and there are these kind of homegrown sort of rights as well. So if this particular MLS franchise doesn't want you and you're going to end up going to another MLS franchise, there kind of has to be an agreement between the two franchises that it's okay. And if the franchise that you have been training at or being at says, nah, you can't go to San Jose Earthquakes or nah, you can't go to FC Dallas or nah, you can't go to Portland Timbers, then you're SOL. You can't go. Done. You're locked in. So that's why folks need to be very careful, need to be very aware of these complications. They also mentioned USL. If you go to USL, MLS can't do anything about that. You're in the free and clear.
What, Gary, what's the difference though between, or is it the same training compensation and solidarity payments?
It's different. So it's part of the same sort of, they're lumped in together, But the reason I mentioned training compensation is because that's the big ticket item. That's the big money, right? Solidarity payments is like this much. And that extends kind of like throughout the lifetime of the player's trajectory. So
right.
The clubs that were, the youth clubs that were, that train the player get a little bit of trickle down money for every transfer fee that is paid by a purchasing club. So I'll give you like ballpark sort of thing. So if a club purchases you for $1 million, maybe there's like $10,000 or $20,000 worth of training compensation that would trickle down to the youth clubs. It's peanuts.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like you said, Gary, if this player starts looking at USL, there's nothing that MLS can do.
There's nothing MLS can do. Yeah. You're good, because the training compensation stuff and the territory rights and all that stuff, well, they're separate things. Territory rights is every MLS franchise has a region in which all the players that happen to be playing in that region, they have first right of refusal to that player.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Even if you're not in their academy, you can be playing for Burrito FC, you know, here in Carson, California or something. And if you happen to geographically fall within the LA Galaxy's territory, well, you can go to San Jose Earthquakes or FC Dallas or Houston or Portland. The Galaxy owns you.
That's crazy,
yeah. Bro. But you can go to USL. That's not an issue.
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, think about how many players that screwed over. You know, because also in her email, she mentions like this guy's, she says he's a true winger and their team doesn't use wingers in their formation. You know, think about it. This kid can't just go to the next MLS Academy over because now this team basically owns him, you know? So what are your thoughts, Gary?
But they might let him go, because if they don't value him. So for example, like Brian, if a young player was not in his plans, right? And the franchise as a whole says, yeah, this player's not going to be a pro, or we don't really rate him or whatever. If you've been cool and chill, they're not going to get in your way. You know, if San Jose happens to want you, Brian or whoever would be like, okay, cool. Go play at San Jose. All good. Yeah. Cause they don't value you. So that's also a signal. If they're like, yeah, okay, cool, go for it, then that truly means it wasn't political or it wasn't some shady stuff going on. It's like they don't rate you. That's all.
Yeah. That makes sense. What about her comments about, you know, the U18 coach favors certain players and dictates the rosters for my son's U16 team? I mean, I feel like that happens at most academies, right? I mean, it only makes sense that the 18s coach would want some oversight into the next group of players, no?
I tend to lean to not really. I tend to lean towards they're mostly segregated unless it's the academy director that we're talking about, right? It's segregated. The U18 coach is the U18 coach. The U16 is the U16 coach. But in certain contexts, it's possible that the U18 coach has enormous influence. Yeah. And says, yeah, like these are the players that, you know, I think are better and I think you should be playing. But I don't think that any coach is a complete lackey and is going to be like, oh, okay, if you tell me so, I'm going to go ahead and do what you tell me. I don't think that's generally the case.
Yeah. I want to pick your brain, Gary, on highlight films. Because I know you've received hundreds, if not thousands, of people sending you films. Hey, Gary, check out my son or daughter. Or, is there anything that you can do? And majority of the time, Gary, they'll send you like a full game without any indicators of who the player actually is, or the quality is low. You know, I'm not asking all the audience or parents to start sending you videos. But what do you think entails like a good quality highlight video that would actually get somebody's attention? Because
this is a multi-episode question. High level.
The reason I ask you this, and again, I'm not going to mention the name, but like the follow-up to this email exchange was, you know, hey, Gary, I know you have some influence in Southern California or whatever. Can you look at my son or daughter's highlight clips? And it was basically, you know, full matches where you can't even tell who the player is, you know?
Yeah. Well, in that case, if they're full matches, then
you don't watch it.
Yeah. I'm not even going to look. Like, imagine you're going to sit through a 90-minute game, and then that's not happening, okay? The best thing to do is to actually compile a highlight reel, highlight clips of great actions of the player. And that's a whole other topic unto itself. What is actually a great action? What's not a great action? People send me stuff that they think, oh, this is amazing stuff right here. And I'm like, that's fucking terrible. That's terrible. That's terrible. And that's terrible. And they think it's the best. But
it's the kid juggling before the video.
Like I said, multi-episode subject. But the highlight reel, if it's first contact, you know, with whoever it is that you want to market to, if it's first contact, the highlight reel should be super short. 2 minutes, yeah. Super short. Something that the guy on the receiving end might be like, okay, 2 minutes of my time. It's valuable, but I'll go ahead and take a look. Why not? You know, even if it's just out of courtesy, 2 minutes. And the first clip or the first two or three clips better fucking be impressive, you know, because if the first two or three are like not impressive, not remarkable, I'm not going to watch the rest of the 2 minutes. It's over. It's game over. So that is what should be sent. And if there's any sort of intrigue by the person watching it, they'll follow up with you. They'll say, oh, okay, cool. Do you have a 5-minute highlight reel, you know, or a 10-minute highlight reel? And because this one maybe only shows them scoring goals, you know, and assisting. I want to see other things like hold up play or defensive actions or all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And then ultimately, before somebody makes a decision, whether it is to purchase a player or take a player on as a client or, you know, decide to help the player out or to recruit the player themselves, then they might ultimately ask you for a full match because you want to see the full context. And I should add that all of these clips plus the full match better be well filmed. It better be from elevation. And it better not be one of these automated kind of pseudo AI ball tracker cameras that does the things automatically. Trash, garbage. It needs to be filmed well. Like, and what do I mean by that? It better track the gameplay like a professional match tracks gameplay. Those are my recommendations, man.
Yeah. And also, I think it's important to be able to like clearly identify the player that you're trying to highlight, you know, like
of course.
Their audience doesn't know, but I used to help with you guys and the players and, you know, making highlight films and sending them to teams in Europe. And I had to learn a lot of lessons quick, dude. Like I remember like one of the first copies that I sent you over was trash clips. I added like this like inspirational music in the background, bro. Like, you know, no coach cares about what song you have fucking playing there, dude. It's like,
no, I'm glad you brought that up. I don't remember the first one. I wonder, do you think we can look up our, you know, my email trail with you and we can probably look up what your first video ever was. We don't have to do it now, but I'm curious if there's a trail. I don't even know, but I do remember the music and that's a good thing. Yeah, guys. Yeah. People out there, don't fucking put music on your videos. It's a red flag, okay? Raw footage, nothing else. If you want to keep the background noise of the audience or the sidelines, you know, yelling and screaming, that's fine because it gives it some sort of atmosphere. Don't put on your fucking favorite tunes or some shit in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, you messaged me back. You're like, Benny, what the fuck is this?
No, I did not.
You didn't. But no, it's good advice, dude. Dude, at the time, I don't think I realized like the magnitude of what I was doing and who would be on the receiving end of these clips. Like, you know, like top teams in Portugal are gonna watch this video, and I have over here hip hop instrumental 23, bro. But yeah,
I don't blame anybody because what is it that you see out on the internet? You see clips of Messi or clips or whatever, and they have background music. But understand your audience. The audience for that stuff is the common people, the fans, the spectators, the people, you know, who are just scrolling, you know, and trying to be entertained. For a practitioner in the field, don't give us that nonsense, please.
For sure. And I think oftentimes, Gary, like if somebody is interested in you, you know, they're going to be asking you like, hey, send me over the video. You know, it's like, I don't know, maybe as the situation ever happened where somebody random hit you up and you saw the video and you're like, oh shit, like I need to give this kid a chance. I feel like it's extremely rare.
I'll tell you why I'm pausing. Because of your question, oh, did I ever pause and kind of think to myself, should I give this kid a chance? The times that has happened is when the person doing the referral, you know, and telling me to look at the player and consider the player is somebody within the ecosystem,
yeah,
a practitioner in the ecosystem. So that carries some weight, some influence. You understand?
Right.
But if it's coming from the player themselves or the family or somebody associated with the family and somebody who's not an actual practitioner, meaning not a coach, not a scout, not a director, you know what I mean? Like none of those folks. Yeah. No, nobody has ever. Yeah. No, it's just no.
Watch after
and
this.
But it's not because I just discard them outright. Like I watch, I'll watch the video or whatever. And it's just like, no,
yeah. No. And if all of these things that we just listed off, it's not like meeting your requirements or your standards, even like the quality of the video, you know, so quick to turn it off, dude.
Yeah. It's really quick because let me give folks another alternative explanation too. It's that, let's be real here. Many a times they're decent players. They're okay players. They're pretty good players. They could be potentially playing somewhere. I don't know, whatever that means. Okay. But to help you takes this much work, right? An extraordinary amount of work to help you. And in return, you get nothing in return for it. There's just absolutely nothing. So I might be able to help you because you're a decent player. You could do something, but it might take 100 hours or 50 hours or 300 hours or just brain cycles, you know, just use. And there is nothing in return.
Yeah.
So you, I mean, I'm human. Everybody's human. You do the simple calculation. You're like, no, I'm not going to do that. Which sucks, you know, and which is another reason why I fight so hard for a meritocracy in the American soccer ecosystem. Because if there was promotion and relegation, if there was a meritocracy, I wouldn't be doing that. All the clubs in the country would be frantically lifting up every single rock and looking under every single twig to see if there's any talent, and they would be doing it. And your kid would be discovered, and your kid would eventually find the appropriate level that they deserve and fulfill their potential. That's why you fight for a meritocracy. That's why you fight for promotion relegation, Benny. But without that system, this is the system that we're in, where I am getting videos. Can you help me out, Gary? Like, why? Why? Like, it makes no sense for me. You know, if I own the club or if you feel me, then it's a different story.
Yeah. I'm glad you circled it. Full circle to promotion relegation, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah,
everything's this person would not have any issues with protected homegrown rights or nothing, because with promotion relegation, open ecosystem, the MLS teams wouldn't all be part of the same family, wouldn't all be part of the same club that is MLS. They would be out. They would be competitors to one another. And if you weren't valued there, other MLS teams, right? If it was an open ecosystem or USL teams or whatever, they'd be frantically scouting. They would see your kid. They'd say, look, this kid's being benched. He's not, but we like him. That's our player profile. We play with wingers. You know, we're going to go and recruit him. And there's nothing that MLS franchise can do about it if the kid gets recruited away. That's how it should work, man.
Yep. We live in a fucked up system, dude.
It's North Korea. We live in soccer North Korea.
Yep. Dude, this was a wild episode, bro. We talked about murder, drug, partying.
Cocaine.
dude, I feel bad for that one guy that says he always listens with his kid, dude.
Wait, who?
There's a guy that commented. He's like, hey, like if you don't mind not dropping so many F-bombs, like I had my kids in the background when I listened.
Put the AirPods on, man.
Yeah. No, they'll learn, dude. You know, it's funny. It's one of my, you know, coaching buddies. I had dinner with him the other night, and he's like, he had like an hour drive home or whatever. He's like, yeah, like I'm going to put on a podcast or something. And I told him about, you know, our podcast. Mm-hmm. And then the next day he comes to training. He's like, oh, dude, that was badass. He's like, it was funny because the first 30 minutes, like, you guys were talking about rondos and like, it sounded so professional. And then out of nowhere, you guys just dropped like 30 F-bombs.
It's the best, man. This is what it's all about. Just shooting the shit.
Yeah, dude. No, this is a good one, dude.
And I don't give a fuck. Do I want our YouTube channel to grow from 6,000 to 60,000? Of course. That'd be awesome. And all you guys who are tuning in, guys, you can help us get there if you want, you know, and if you agree with us and you want to see the ecosystem the way that you want to see it, spread the word, subscribe, send episodes to the other parents on your team, spread it out. Do I want that? Of course I do. Will I ever say, maybe I should not be who I am so that we can get to 60,000 subscribers? Never in a fucking million years. If I didn't bend the knee to the multi-billion dollar MLS owners who try to coerce me, you know, to behave a certain way, and I would be rewarded a certain way if I bent the knee and kissed the ring and licked the boot and did things the quote-unquote right way. If I didn't bend, you think I'm going to fucking bend the knee and say, oh, I'm not going to be myself on my own podcast? No fucking chance. So if we're stuck at 6,000, Benny, we're stuck at 6,000. If people unsubscribe and it becomes 5,000, 4,000, 3,000, five people, fuck it.
We'll keep going for those five.
It's the fucking Chardonnay talking, but I'm being real.
Dang, dude. We're going to need to have a live episode one of these days.
Okay, look, Ben, let's do it, but I just
yes, we need to do that too, but I meant like in person. Same room, bottle of wine, and just go off.
That'd be amazing, man. Be amazing. I'm looking for a new place, as you know. You know, we've been looking around and shopping around. Hopefully we land something bigger, and then I'll have a dedicated studio, man. That'd be great.
Yeah. You're badass, dude. Then we can invite more people on the podcast.
Yeah. I think we've been doing good getting people from the outside pretty regularly.
Yeah. Hey, maybe people can even drop in the comments, like, if there's somebody that you think would be a good guest, and we'll see if anybody comes up with something good, dude.
Oh, boy.
There's a lot of people that want to be on the show.
Cool. No, go ahead and do that, guys. Go ahead and do that. I want you to do it, no matter what I say right now, what comes next. But it's going to expose you as to who you think is good out there. And I'm going to be like, oh, Jesus Christ, you've been listening to that fuckface? Oh, my God. Like, oh my God, Ben, honestly, it's a disaster out there.
Yeah.
So I've received messages. Oh, you should have so-and-so on the pod. That, you want me to have that dumb fuck on the podcast? I don't think so.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. We'll see who people think, dude.
All right, Ben, this has been great too. And guys who are listening to this audio only, we're publishing this on YouTube. You can see, you know, our faces, our mannerisms and everything. And Benny literally started, it was daylight. And now this should be your theme, dude. It's dark as fuck in your room.
No, I know. I was because you guys know I usually put like a green screen in the background. And now I have a black shirt on. It's fucking pitch black in my room. So I don't think I'll be able to. I would probably just be like a floating head, bro.
I want you to have your green screen like usual, but once it gets dark like this in your room, just get rid of the green screen. This should be it.
All right. I like it, dude. Sick, no?
I like it too, man. Okay, tomorrow we're down?
Yep. I'll see you there, bro.
Okay. Thank you, Benny. All right. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com.
www.thefootballcoaching.com. Until next time, cheers, everyone, and keep building.